You're standing in your kitchen, and you genuinely can't remember if you've fed the dog, whether you already took your medication, or why you walked into this room in the first place. Your brain feels like it's buffering, stuck on a loading screen that never quite resolves. If you're experiencing that fog where you read the same paragraph 5 times without absorbing a single word, if you've started a task only to find yourself staring blankly at nothing 10 minutes later with no memory of the transition, if you've forgotten important appointments, left the stove on, driven past your own street, or completely blanked on conversations people swear you had yesterday, if you feel like you're watching your life through a smudged window, always slightly removed from what's happening around you, if simple decisions like what to eat for lunch feel overwhelmingly complex, requiring more mental energy than you can possibly summon, if you've walked into rooms and forgotten why, searched for your phone while holding it, or introduced yourself to someone you've already met twice, you're not losing your mind. You're experiencing what I call the grief fog, and it's one of the most common yet least discussed effects of loss in that brutal first year. Your brain isn't broken, it's overloaded. You've probably tried to push through it, telling yourself to just focus harder, to be more present. Maybe you've made lists, endless lists, only to lose the lists themselves or stare at them without comprehension. You've likely downloaded meditation apps that promise mental clarity, but sitting still for 10 minutes only amplified the chaos inside your head. Perhaps you've tried setting phone reminders for everything, creating elaborate systems of alarms and notifications that now just blend into background noise you've learned to ignore. You might have cleared your schedule, thinking that doing less would help, only to find that the emptiness gave the fog more room to expand. Maybe you've had people tell you to stay busy or keep your mind occupied, so you packed your days with activities, but you moved through them like a ghost, present in body but utterly absent in mind. You've probably beat yourself up about it too, adding a layer of shame to the confusion, wondering why you can't seem to function at even the most basic level when you used to manage so much more. Here's what nobody tells you. Grief doesn't just make you sad, it fundamentally changes how your brain processes information. When you're grieving, your mind is running intensive background processes every single moment. Part of your consciousness is constantly scanning for the person who's gone, listening for their voice, looking for their face in crowds, reaching for your phone to text them. Another part is continuously updating your understanding of reality, trying to integrate the fact that they're not coming back. Another part is reviewing memories, attempting to preserve every detail before they fade. And yet another part is trying to manage the logistics of your actual life, the bills, the job, the responsibilities that didn't pause just because your world shattered. It's like having 47 browser tabs open simultaneously, each one playing a different video at full volume, each one demanding your attention while you're also trying to write an important email in the only tab that actually matters right now. Your mental RAM is maxed out. Your processor is overheating. Of course you can't remember if you fed the dog. The 3-tab reset isn't about fixing your grief or pushing through the fog. It's not about being more productive or getting back to your old self. It's about giving your overwhelmed brain a simple, repeatable system to find just enough clarity to handle what's in front of you without crashing. It's about working with your grief brain, not against it. In the next 20 minutes, I'm going to walk you through a specific 3-step process that will help you cut through the fog when you need to make a decision, complete a task, or simply be present for a moment. You'll learn how to identify which mental tabs are consuming your resources in the background, how to temporarily bookmark the ones that matter without losing them, and how to clear enough space to handle one thing at a time. This isn't about becoming your old self again. That person existed in a different reality. This is about finding functionality in your new one. I need to be honest with you about something. This won't make the grief go away. You'll still have moments where the fog descends without warning, but you'll have a tool to navigate through it instead of drowning in it. You'll have a way to create pockets of clarity when you need them most.
This process has helped thousands of people in their first year of grief move from that paralyzed, buffering state to being able to function in the essential moments, remembering to pick up their kids, completing work tasks without rereading everything 7 times, having conversations where you're actually present, making it through a day without that terrifying feeling that you're losing yourself entirely. Before we begin, I want you to do something for me. I want you to commit to listening to this entire audio without interruption. Not because I need your attention, but because your grief brain is going to try to pull you away. It's going to tell you this won't work, that you've tried everything, that nothing can help. It's going to make you want to pause and check your phone or add something to your mental list or drift off into a memory. That's the fog trying to maintain its grip. 20 minutes, that's all I'm asking. Find a quiet space where you won't be interrupted. If you're driving, that's fine. In fact, the act of driving can sometimes help you stay present. If you're walking, even better. But wherever you are, make a conscious choice right now to stay with me through this entire process. The 3-tab reset only works if you learn all 3 steps, and each one builds on the last. Your brain has been trying to do an impossible job, processing profound loss while maintaining normal life. It's time to give it a system that actually accounts for what you're going through. Not a system that pretends everything is fine, not a system that promises to make you who you were before, but a system designed specifically for a grief brain that's doing its absolute best under impossible circumstances. You deserve clarity, even if it's just for a few minutes at a time. You deserve to feel like yourself again, even if that self is different now. You deserve a way through the fog. Let's begin. You've probably been told to just take it one day at a time, or be gentle with yourself. And look, that's not wrong advice, it's actually quite kind. But here's the problem, it only addresses the surface of what's happening to you. It's like telling someone whose computer is frozen to just be patient with it. Sure, patience is nice, but the computer is still frozen, the tabs are still open, the spinning wheel of death is still spinning. Most grief advice focuses on the emotional experience, the feelings themselves. And yes, those matter tremendously, but what almost no one talks about is the cognitive collapse that happens alongside the emotional pain. You know what I'm talking about, that moment when you walk into a room and have absolutely no idea why you're there, when someone asks you a simple question and your mind just blanks, when you read the same sentence 4 times and still can't tell anyone what it said. When you open your phone to do something specific and 30 seconds later, you're just staring at the home screen with no memory of your intention. This isn't just grief, it's your brain literally running out of processing power. And all the be kind to yourself advice in the world doesn't give you back the ability to remember if you fed the dog, or paid that bill, or responded to your sister's text. The incomplete approach treats grief like it's only an emotional problem, when in reality it's commandeered your entire operating system. But it goes deeper than that, because even if you understand that grief is affecting your thinking, even if you recognize the fog, you're still trying to function in systems that were designed for a version of you that no longer exists. Think about it. Your job still expects the same output. Your family still needs the same things. Your bills still arrive on the same schedule. The grocery shopping doesn't do itself. Your inbox doesn't care that you're grieving. The world didn't pause when your person died, and now you're expected to somehow keep pace with it while running on a fraction of your former capacity.
It's like everyone handed you the same workload, but someone swapped out your computer from 2003 with 256 megabytes of RAM. The tasks didn't change, the deadlines didn't change, but your ability to process them has been fundamentally altered, and nobody seems to notice or care. They just keep wondering why you're so slow now, why you're dropping balls, why you seem so scattered. The real issue is that every system in your life is working against your current reality. Society has this unspoken expectation that grief should be wrapped up in a few weeks, maybe a few months if it was someone really close. There's bereavement leave, sure, but it's laughably short. 3 days? 5 if you're lucky? As if you could process the death of someone you love, plan and attend a funeral, handle all the logistics, and restore your cognitive function to normal in less than a week? So you go back. You return to work, to obligations, to life.
And everyone's relieved because they think you're doing better. But you're not doing better. You're just doing. You're performing functionality. You're wearing the mask of your former self, while inside, your brain is screaming that it cannot handle this many inputs at once. And here's where it gets even more complicated. Because you know you're struggling, and you know you can't keep struggling like this, so you do what we've all been taught to do. You try to push through. You tell yourself you just need to focus harder, try harder, be more disciplined, make better lists, set more alarms, power through the fog. And this is where the suppression trap snaps shut around you. When you try to force your brain to function at its former capacity, when you try to muscle your way through the fog, you actually make everything worse. Because now you're not just dealing with grief, you're dealing with grief plus the tremendous amount of energy it takes to pretend you're not dealing with grief. You're dealing with the original 47 tabs plus the additional tabs that open every time you berate yourself for not being able to handle the original 47 tabs. It's like trying to fix a slow computer by opening more programs. Maybe if I just run one more optimization app, one more cleaner, one more system monitor. No, you're just adding more load to an already overloaded system. Every time you push down a grief response to get through a meeting, that's energy spent. Every time you fake focus during a conversation when your mind is actually 3 years in the past replaying a memory, that's energy spent. Every time you override your body's need to rest because you should be productive, that's energy spent. And all that energy has to come from somewhere. So it comes from the already depleted reserves you're using to do basic things like remember words and make decisions and track time. The suppression doesn't make the grief go away. It just makes you worse at everything else. You end up in this brutal cycle. The grief fog makes everything harder. The difficulty makes you try to push harder. The pushing depletes you further. The depletion makes the fog thicker. And round you go, getting more exhausted, more scattered, more frustrated with yourself, more convinced that something is fundamentally broken in you. But here's what's actually happening. Here's the invisible enemy that no one has named for you. What you're experiencing is grief fog, and it's not a metaphor or a feeling. It's a measurable neurological event. When your brain experiences significant loss, it doesn't just feel sad. It enters a state of chronic threat detection. See, your nervous system can't fully distinguish between physical danger and social or emotional loss. Both trigger survival responses. Both flood your system with stress hormones. So when someone you love dies, your brain interprets this as a threat to your survival, which from an evolutionary perspective makes sense. For most of human history, being separated from your group, losing a protector, losing a partner, these were legitimate survival threats. Your brain is trying to protect you, but the way it protects you is by going into hypervigilance mode. Suddenly, your brain is simultaneously trying to do three things it was never designed to do at once.
First, it's trying to process the loss itself, the memories, the reality that this person is gone, the reorganization of your entire understanding of your life and future. Second, it's scanning constantly for threats, trying to prevent more loss, more pain, more danger. And third, it's still attempting to manage all your normal executive functions, all the daily decisions and tasks and responsibilities that make up a human life. This creates a chemical cascade that fundamentally changes how your brain operates. Cortisol and adrenaline, your stress hormones, flood your prefrontal cortex. That's the part of your brain responsible for decision-making, planning, working memory, focus. It's your brain's CEO. And now it's trying to work while being flooded with stress chemicals. The result? Your working memory capacity literally shrinks. Studies have shown that chronic stress and grief actually reduce the volume of gray matter in your hippocampus, the area responsible for forming new memories and regulating emotions. Your brain physically has less capacity to hold information, to process multiple things at once, to make connections between ideas. Meanwhile, your amygdala, your emotional alarm system, becomes hyperactive. It's on high alert, constantly activated. So not only do you have less processing power, but what processing power you do have is being constantly interrupted by emotional surges. It's like trying to do complex math while someone randomly sounds an air horn next to your head. And your brain is burning through neurotransmitters faster than it can produce them.
Serotonin, dopamine, norepinephrine, all the chemicals that regulate mood, motivation, and cognitive function, they're being depleted. Your brain is running a marathon every single day just to maintain basic function, and it's running out of fuel. This is why you can't remember simple things. This is why decisions feel impossible. This is why you read without comprehending. Why you lose time, why everything takes 3 times longer than it used to. It's not a personal failing. It's not weakness. It's not permanent damage. It's your brain in a neurological state of overload, trying to run too many processes with insufficient resources. And until you address this, until you understand what's actually happening and give your brain a way to manage the load, no amount of trying harder will help. You can't discipline your way out of a neurological crisis. You can't willpower your way to more dopamine. The grief fog will persist until you stop trying to run all 47 tabs at once and start giving your brain a system that works with its current capacity, not against it. You need a way to acknowledge the tabs without letting them crash your whole system. You need a method that doesn't require you to be stronger or more focused or more together than you actually are right now. Because here's the truth. You're not broken. Your brain is doing exactly what it's supposed to do in the face of loss. It's just that no one taught you how to work with a grieving brain instead of fighting against it. And that's exactly what the 3-tab reset does. Now, let me introduce you to the 3-tab reset, the system that's going to help you function again when your grief brain feels like it's simultaneously buffering and crashing. Here's what you need to understand first, and this is the insight that changes everything. Your brain isn't broken. I know it feels broken. I know you've forgotten the word for that kitchen thing 3 times this week, and you've read the same paragraph in that email 7 times without comprehending it. And yesterday, you stood in the grocery store, genuinely unable to remember why you came or how to decide what to buy. But your brain isn't malfunctioning. It's overloaded. There's a massive difference between those 2 states, and understanding that difference is what makes this method work. A broken system needs repair. An overloaded system needs reduced demand. You don't need to fix yourself. You don't need to think clearer or try harder or snap out of it. You need to stop asking your brain to run 47 processes simultaneously when it has the cognitive bandwidth for about 3.
every other approach you've tried has probably operated from the assumption that you need to process everything, feel everything, handle everything all at once, that grief means staying open to every emotion as it arrives, that being responsible means keeping all those plates spinning, that healing requires you to examine every memory and sit with every feeling and work through every task on your list. And maybe eventually that's true. But right now, today, when you can barely remember if you ate lunch, that approach is like running professional video editing software on a phone that's at 2% battery. The issue isn't the software, it's the available resources. The three-tab reset works differently. It's built on a simple recognition. Your grieving brain has dramatically reduced processing power, and instead of fighting that reality, we're going to work with it. We're going to deliberately limit your focus to exactly three things at a time, three things your brain can actually handle, and we're going to create a system for everything else to exist without requiring your attention right now. Not forever, right now. This isn't about ignoring your grief or suppressing your feelings or pretending the other 44 tabs don't exist. They do exist. They're still there, but they don't all need to be playing at full volume simultaneously while you're trying to figure out how to respond to your aunt's text message or whether you can manage a shower today. The method has three steps, and I've organized them into an acronym that's easy to remember even when your brain is foggy. TAB, triage, anchor, bookmark. Each step addresses a different part of the overwhelm, and together they create a structure that holds you when your own mental capacity can't. Let me teach you how this works. The first step is triage, and this happens each morning, ideally before you pick up your phone or start responding to the world's demands. Triage is where you identify exactly three things that genuinely require your mental energy today. Not everything on your to-do list, not everything you're worried about, not everything that might need attention eventually, just three things that need you today. And here's the specific structure: one practical task, one emotional need, one self-care action.
One practical task means something concrete that moves your life forward in some small way. This might be paying a specific bill, making one phone call you've been avoiding, washing the sheets, responding to your boss about that thing, going to the appointment, buying groceries. It's not your entire to-do list. It's the one practical thing that, if you accomplish it today, will prevent a future crisis or reduce your overall stress load. One emotional need means acknowledging something your grief specifically requires today. This might be crying for 20 minutes, looking at photos of the person you lost, talking to your friend who actually understands, writing in your journal, visiting the grave, staying off social media because you cannot handle other people's happiness today. It might also be deliberately not engaging with grief for a few hours because you need a break from the intensity. The point is to name what your emotional system actually needs, rather than either suppressing everything or being swept away by everything. One self-care action means something that maintains your basic functioning as a human animal. This is eating a real meal, not just crackers at the counter, taking a shower, going for a 10-minute walk, taking your medication, getting 15 minutes of sunlight, going to bed at a reasonable hour. These are the things that feel impossible when you're grieving, but that your body requires to continue operating. Three things, one from each category. That's your entire focus for the day. Everything else, and I mean everything else, goes on what I call the later list. This is crucial. The later list isn't a trash can. It's not denial. It's not you being irresponsible or avoidant. It's you being realistic about your current capacity and making an active decision about where to direct your limited resources. The later list is where you put all the things that are real and might need attention, but do not need it today. This is where the other bills go, the ones that aren't due for 2 weeks. This is where the project at work goes, the one that's important but has a deadline next month.
This is where your complicated feelings about your mother-in-law's comments go, the ones you'll need to address eventually, but not today. This is where the entire concept of organizing the closet goes, and cleaning out the car, and figuring out the life insurance paperwork, and deciding about the holidays. All of those things are real. All of them might be important. None of them are your three tabs today. Here's what this looks like in practice. You wake up, your brain immediately starts its usual chaos. The wave of remembering your person is gone, the anxiety about the 17 things you haven't handled, the email you need to send, the friend you haven't called back, the weird pain in your side you're worried about, the fact that you haven't exercised in 3 weeks, the memory that just surfaced, the guilt about something you said or didn't say. Instead of trying to address all of that or push it all away, you take out a piece of paper or open your phone and you write down your three tabs for today. Practical task: call the insurance company about that claim. Just that one call. Emotional need: let myself cry when I need to without trying to hold it together. Today is not a holding it together day. Self-care action: eat an actual dinner with protein and vegetables sitting down. That's it. Those are your three tabs. Everything else you just thought of, it goes on the later list. And you write it there so your brain knows it's not lost, just deferred. Now, some of you are already thinking, but I have more than three things that need attention today. I have responsibilities. I have a job. I have kids. I can't just ignore everything else. I know, and you're not going to. Here's what you need to understand about triage. You're not identifying the only three things you'll do today. You're identifying the only three things that get your intentional mental energy and decision-making capacity today. You can still do your job. You can still take care of your kids. You can still show up to the thing you committed to. But those activities are happening on autopilot, on muscle memory, on the bare minimum of functioning. You're not asking yourself to also process complex emotions while doing them, or make significant decisions, or perform at your peak. You're getting through them. Your three tabs are different. These are the things you're actually bringing your full, limited, precious cognitive resources to. These are the things you're protecting space for. These are the things, when your brain starts spinning out, you come back to and say, "Is this one of my three tabs?" No? Then later list. Let me give you a harder example. You're at work. You're in that meeting that you attend every week. The meeting is not one of your three tabs. It's just part of the baseline functioning you're maintaining. But during the meeting, your colleague mentions a project deadline you'd forgotten about. Panic spikes. That's important. That needs attention. Your brain wants to spiral into it immediately. When is it due? What have I already done? What do I need to do? Who do I need to email? Can I even handle this right now? Maybe I should leave the meeting and start working on it. Maybe I need to tell them I can't do it. Maybe... Stop. Is this one of your three tabs for today? No. It's Thursday. The project is due next Tuesday. It's real, it's important, but it doesn't require your mental energy today. So you write it on your later list. Project X, deadline Tuesday, review weekend. You make that note, and then you return your attention to the meeting. Not because the project doesn't matter, but because you've made an active decision about what you can handle today, and that wasn't on the list. This is triage. It's not about having only three responsibilities in your life. It's about having only three things that get the full force of your attention in your current state. The second step is anchor, and this is where you take those three tabs and attach them to specific time blocks and physical locations. Your overloaded brain desperately needs external structure right now because your internal regulation is shot. You cannot rely on motivation or willpower or remembering to do things. You need your environment and your schedule to hold the plan for you. For each of your three items, you're going to decide exactly when and exactly where it will happen. Not sometime this afternoon, but at 2:15. Not at home, but at the kitchen table. The more specific, the better. So those three tabs from earlier, now they get anchored. Practical task: call insurance company at 2 p.m. sitting in the car in the driveway where it's quiet. emotional need, let myself cry when it happens, but specifically set aside 7 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. in the bedroom with the door closed to really let it out if it hasn't come naturally. Self-care action: make dinner at 5:30 p.m. at the kitchen counter using the recipe that's already saved on my phone. See the difference? It's not just what you're doing, it's when and where. This matters because decision-making is exhausting for a grief brain. Every time you have to decide when to do something or where to do it, that's cognitive load. Every time you have to remember that you intended to do something, that's a task running in the background, draining your battery. When you anchor your tabs to specific times and places, you eliminate dozens of micro-decisions. You don't spend all afternoon thinking, I need to make that call. Should I do it now? Is now good? Maybe after this? Maybe in an hour? That internal negotiation is exhausting. Instead, you've decided, 2 p.m. in the car. When 2 p.m. arrives, you go to the car and make the call. There's no decision left to make. The physical location anchor is especially important, and it's something most productivity advice overlooks. Your brain creates associations with locations. When you anchor a task to a specific place, that place becomes a cue. You sit down at the kitchen table at 2 p.m., and your brain knows this is where we pay bills. The environment is doing some of the remembering for you. This is also why you want to vary your locations for different types of tasks when possible. Don't try to process your deep grief in the same chair where you do work emails. Don't try to make difficult phone calls in the same spot where you're supposed to relax. Your brain is already confused enough. Give it environmental clarity. Let me walk through a full day with anchored tabs so you can see how this creates structure. You wake up. First thing, before checking your phone, you do your triage. Today, your three tabs are 1, email your boss about that deadline extension; 2, let yourself look through photos of your person for as long as you need; 3, go for a 15-minute walk outside. You anchor them. Email at 9 a.m. at the desk with coffee already made. Photos at 4 p.m. on the couch with the door closed. Walk at 6 p.m. around the neighborhood block. Now you have a shape for your day. You don't have to hold all of this in your head. You've written it down: 9 a.m., desk, email; 4 p.m., couch, photos; 6 p.m., walk. The rest of the day, you're on autopilot for everything else. You get through your work tasks on muscle memory. You respond to the texts that are easy and ignore the ones that aren't. You eat something at lunch, nothing elaborate, but when 9 p.m. arrives, you sit down at the desk and you write that email. When 4 p.m. comes, you go to the couch and you let yourself sink into those photos for however long it takes. When 6 p.m. hits, you put on shoes and walk around the block. You didn't have to decide any of those things in the moment. You didn't have to motivate yourself or remember or negotiate with yourself.
The time and place were already decided. You just had to show up to the anchor point. This is what I mean by external structure. You're not relying on your broken executive function. You're letting the clock and the location be your executive function. One more thing about anchoring. It also gives you permission to not think about these things until their anchored time. If it's 11 a.m. and you suddenly feel anxious about looking at photos of your person, you can tell yourself, that's at 4 p.m. on the couch. It's handled. I don't need to think about it now. If it's 1 p.m. and you remember you need to email your boss, you can remind yourself, that's done. I did that at 9 a.m. If it's 3 p.m. and you're feeling guilty that you haven't exercised, you can think, that's at 6 p.m. It's already scheduled. The anchors do the holding so your brain doesn't have to. The third step is bookmark, and this is how you handle everything else that crashes into your day despite your careful planning. Because here's the truth, you will be working on one of your three tabs and your brain will suddenly serve up an intrusive memory. You will be in the middle of your anchored time block, and someone will text you about something that feels urgent. You will be focused on your one practical task, and a wave of grief will hit you out of nowhere.
you will be trying so hard to stick to your 3 tabs and 17 other things will demand attention. This is not failure. This is just what grief is like. Your brain is processing a massive trauma, and that processing doesn't respect your schedule. Other people don't know about your 3 tab system. Life keeps happening even though you're barely functioning. Bookmark is how you handle this without either ignoring important things or letting them derail you completely. Here's the system. You keep a designated notebook or a specific app or even just a running note on your phone. This is your bookmark space. When an intrusive thought arrives, when a new task pops up, when a memory surfaces, when someone asks you for something, when your brain tries to spin out into worry about something that's not one of your 3 tabs, you write it down in the bookmark space. And this is crucial. You acknowledge it out loud. You actually say, either aloud or very clearly in your mind, "I see you. I will come back to you." Then you return to your current tab. That's the whole technique. Write it down, acknowledge it, return to focus. Let me show you what this looks like. You're sitting at the kitchen table at 2 p.m., making that phone call to the insurance company, your one practical task for the day. You're on hold. While you're waiting, your brain suddenly presents you with a vivid memory of the last conversation you had with your person. The memory is intense. It's pulling you under. You can feel yourself starting to spiral into it, starting to cry, starting to lose your grip on the current moment. Old approach, you either try to push the memory away completely, which takes enormous energy and doesn't really work, or you surrender to it completely and abandon the phone call, which leaves you feeling even more out of control. New approach, with bookmark, you grab your notebook. You write, "Memory, last conversation in the kitchen." You say out loud, even though you're alone, "I see you. This is important. I will come back to you at 4 p.m. during my emotional time block." Then you take one breath and return your attention to the hold music. The memory doesn't disappear. You're not suppressing it, but you've externalized it. You've made a record of it so your brain knows it won't be lost. You've acknowledged that it matters, and you've made a plan to return to it at a time when you have space for it. Or here's another scenario. You're 20 minutes into your anchored walk, your self-care action for the day. Your phone buzzes. It's a text from your sister with a long question about estate paperwork. She wants to know what you think about selling the house. This is important. This is complicated. This definitely needs attention. But it's not one of your 3 tabs for today. You don't ignore the text. You don't pretend you didn't see it. You also don't stop your walk, sit down on the curb, and try to compose a thoughtful response about an overwhelming topic while your heart rate is elevated and you're trying to take care of yourself. Instead, you open your bookmark, you write, "Sister's text about house, need to read carefully and respond thoughtfully." You text your sister back, "Got this. It's important. I will respond tomorrow when I can give it real attention." Then you put your phone away and finish your walk. You've bookmarked it. You've acknowledged both to yourself and to your sister that it matters, and you've protected your current tab.
Here's what makes bookmarks so powerful. It's the opposite of avoidance, but it's also the opposite of being overwhelmed by everything simultaneously. You're not saying these things don't matter. You're saying they don't all have to matter right now, in this moment, while you're trying to do this one thing. Your grief brain is desperately trying to make sure nothing gets lost. That's why it keeps throwing things at you. That's why it won't let you focus. It's terrified that if you stop thinking about something, you'll forget it, neglect it, fail at it. The bookmark system solves this. You're creating an external storage system that your brain can trust. When you write something down and acknowledge it, your brain can release it from active RAM because it knows there's a record. Think of it like this. Right now, your brain is trying to hold 47 browser tabs and active memory because it doesn't trust that they'll be there if it looks away. Bookmark is you showing your brain, "Look, here's the bookmark folder.
All the tabs are saved here. You can see them. They're not gone. We can open them later. You don't have to keep them all running at once. Over time, you'll develop your own language for bookmarking. Some people just write quick words, mom's birthday, work project, that thing I said, guilt about Thursday. Others write full sentences. Some people categorize their bookmarks, tasks on one page, emotions on another, memories on another. It doesn't matter. What matters is that you have one consistent place where things get externalized and acknowledged. And here's something that might surprise you. You won't actually come back to everything you bookmark. Some things will feel urgent when they pop up, but will reveal themselves as less important when you review your list later. Some memories will need immediate attention. Others will integrate on their own once you've acknowledged them. Some tasks will solve themselves or become irrelevant. That's fine. The bookmark isn't a new to-do list you have to complete. It's a holding space that prevents cognitive overload. You might review your bookmarks at the end of the day or once a week. You might find that some things can go directly to the later list. Some might become one of tomorrow's three tabs. Some might just need that acknowledgement and nothing more. Now, let me address what you might be thinking, because I know the doubts are coming up. You might be thinking, three things, that's all? I have so much more than three things that actually need to happen. What about my job? What about my kids? What about all the grief paperwork and legal stuff and decisions that have to be made? I hear you, and here's what's true. You do have more than three things in your life, but you don't have cognitive capacity for more than three things right now. So the question is, do you want to spread your extremely limited mental energy across 47 things and do all of them poorly while feeling constantly overwhelmed, or do you want to direct your energy to three things that actually get done while everything else either runs on autopilot or gets strategically deferred? The three tabs aren't your entire life. They're your intentional focus. Everything else is either baseline maintenance that you're doing without overthinking it, or it's on the later list, waiting for a day when it becomes one of the three tabs. You might be thinking, this feels selfish. Other people need things from me. I can't just tell my boss or my kids or my grieving family members that I'm only focusing on three things today. Here's the reframe. You're not actually available to other people right now in the way you normally are. That's just reality. Your capacity is dramatically reduced. So you can either pretend you have full capacity and fail at everything while also having a breakdown, or you can be honest about your current limitations and direct your reduced capacity strategically. The people who love you don't want you to break. They want you to function. Functioning right now means working within your actual capacity, not your imaginary should-be capacity. Also, notice that one of your three tabs can absolutely be about someone else. Help my daughter with her school project can be your practical task. Really listen when my partner talks about their grief can be your emotional need. The three-tab system doesn't make you self-absorbed. It makes you intentional about where you direct your limited resources. And you might be thinking, what if I can't even do three things? What if three tabs is still too many? Then you do fewer. The number three works for most people in most situations, but it's not magic. If you're in the immediate aftermath of loss, if you're in a particularly dark depression, if you're having a worse than usual day, your three tabs might look like this. 1, get out of bed. 2, drink water. 3, survive until tomorrow. That's legitimate.
That's working with your actual capacity. The system adapts to whatever you can genuinely handle. You might be thinking, this seems so rigid. What about spontaneity? What about just living? Fair question, and here's the thing. You can't actually be spontaneous right now. Your grief brain isn't offering you spontaneity, it's offering you chaos. When you're truly overwhelmed, just living means being swept along by whatever emotion or demand is loudest in any given moment. That's not freedom, that's drowning. The structure of the three-tab system isn't the opposite of freedom. It's the foundation that makes any functioning possible. Once you have the structure, once you're not drowning, once you've proven to your brain that you can handle three things without everything falling apart, then you can start adding back flexibility. But right now, today, structure is what gives you any agency at all. You might be thinking, I tried something like this and it didn't work. I made lists, I made plans, and then I couldn't stick to them and I felt even worse. I'm guessing the plans you made before were either too ambitious, 20 things instead of 3, or too vague, work on grief instead of look at photos on the couch at 4. Or you were trying to rely on willpower and motivation instead of external anchors. Or you were treating all the intrusive thoughts as things to suppress instead of things to bookmark. The three-tab system works specifically because it addresses the unique cognitive limitations of a grief brain. It's not generic productivity advice. It's engineered for overload. Let me tell you why this actually works, why this isn't just another organizational system that sounds good but falls apart in practice. The three-tab reset works because it aligns with how your brain actually functions under stress, not how you wish it functioned or how it used to function before grief. When your brain is overwhelmed, it loses its ability to prioritize. Everything feels equally urgent. Everything feels like it needs attention right now. This is why you can spend 4 hours cycling between 17 different tasks and accomplish nothing. Your brain can't distinguish between what actually needs you today and what's just loud. Triage solves this. It forces prioritization when your brain can't do it automatically. By limiting yourself to 3 things and requiring them to span 3 different categories, practical, emotional, and self-care, you're manually doing the executive function work that your grief brain can't do on its own. When your brain is overwhelmed, it also loses its ability to initiate tasks. You know something needs to happen, but you can't figure out how to start. You sit there staring at the thing, paralyzed, while time passes and anxiety builds. Anchor solves this. By deciding exactly when and where something will happen, you eliminate the initiation paralysis. You don't have to figure out how to start, you just have to show up at the designated time and place. The anchor point does the initiating for you. And when your brain is overwhelmed, it can't regulate attention. You try to focus on one thing, and your brain immediately serves up 17 other things. Not because you're disciplined, but because your brain is in threat scanning mode, trying to make sure nothing dangerous gets missed. Bookmark solves this. It gives your threat-scanning brain a way to flag things without requiring immediate action. When your brain throws something at you, you don't have to address it or suppress it. You can acknowledge it, which satisfies the threat scanner, and then return to your task. You've proven to your brain that things won't get lost, which gradually teaches it that it doesn't need to interrupt you constantly. This system also works because it's designed for reduced capacity, not aspirational capacity. Most advice about functioning through hard times assumes you just need better strategies to access your normal abilities. The three-tab reset assumes your abilities are genuinely reduced right now, and instead of fighting that, it works within those constraints. It's the difference between trying to run 47 programs on a damaged computer and choosing to run only the 3 programs that the damaged computer can actually handle. Finally, this system works because it's iterative. Each day you practice it, you're gathering data about your actual capacity. Some days, 3 tabs feels manageable. Some days, it feels like too much. Both are useful information. You're learning what your grief brain can genuinely handle, which means you can plan more realistically tomorrow. You're not failing when you can't complete all 3 tabs. You're learning to calibrate the system to your current reality. The 3-tab reset isn't about becoming productive again. It's not about getting back to normal.
It's about creating a structure that lets you function at all during a period when your brain is fundamentally changed by loss. It's about proving to yourself that you can make a plan and follow it, even if it's a tiny plan. It's about reducing the cognitive chaos just enough that you can do one thing at a time without feeling like everything is falling apart. Your mind really is like that computer with 47 tabs open, each one playing something different at full volume. The grief fog you're experiencing isn't a character flaw. It's not you being weak or broken. It's your system trying to process more information than it has resources to handle. You don't need to close all the tabs at once. You probably can't, but you can choose 3 tabs to keep open today. You can mute the rest temporarily, and you can give your processor space to handle one thing at a time without crashing. That's what the 3-tab reset does. It gives you a way to function that's actually built for a grief brain, not for the person you were before loss. It meets you exactly where you are, and it works. So, you've learned about the 3-tab reset. You understand why your brain feels like a computer with 73 tabs open, draining your battery, slowing everything down. You know how grief doesn't just break your heart. It fragments your attention, scatters your energy, makes simple decisions feel impossible. And now you have a method, a way to work with your grief brain instead of fighting against it. But here's where everything changes, from understanding to actually doing it. Because knowing about the 3-tab reset isn't the same as using it to navigate your days. So let's talk about exactly how you're going to implement this, starting right now, building through today, tomorrow, and into the weeks ahead when this becomes second nature, when you become someone who moves through grief with intention rather than being paralyzed by it. Right now, while you're listening to this, I want you to do one simple thing. Take out your phone or grab a piece of paper, whatever's closest. You're going to write down your 3 tabs for today. Not for this week, not for the overwhelming list of everything you've been neglecting, just today. What are the 3 things that actually matter before you go to sleep tonight? And here's the key. One of those tabs should be something grief-related that you've been avoiding. Maybe it's responding to one condolence message. Maybe it's deciding what to do with their coffee mug that's still in the cabinet. Maybe it's just allowing yourself 15 minutes to cry without apologizing for it. Write that down as tab 1, the thing you've been pushing away. Then add 2 more, one practical thing you need to do, and one thing that's just for your survival, eating something real, taking a shower, going outside for 5 minutes. 3 tabs, that's it. You're not fixing everything today. You're just clearing the clutter enough to see what actually matters. Do that now. I'll wait. Okay, you've got your 3 tabs. That's your system for today, for the next few hours. And here's how you're going to use it. Every time you feel that overwhelm rising, that sense of, I should be doing 17 things at once, you're going to physically or mentally look at your 3 tabs. When someone asks you to do something, you're going to check, is this one of my 3 tabs? If it's not, your answer is, I can't today, or I'll look at that tomorrow. You're not being rude, you're not being selfish, you're being someone who's grieving and managing their cognitive load with intention. When you catch yourself spiraling into worry about all the things you're not doing, you're going to redirect, I have 3 tabs open, these 3, the rest is closed for today. If something genuinely urgent comes up, you're allowed to close 1 tab and open another, but the rule holds, 3 tabs maximum. As you move through today, you'll notice something. You might actually complete one of those tabs. You might respond to that message. You might make that phone call. You might eat that meal. And when you do, you're going to acknowledge it, not with guilt about what you didn't do, not with comparison to who you used to be before loss, just, I did 1 thing today that mattered. That's a data point. That's evidence that you're not completely non-functional. You're grieving and functional, both things at once. Tomorrow, you're going to build on that foundation. Tomorrow morning, before you look at your phone, before anyone else's needs flood in, you're going to identify your three tabs again. But this time, you're going to be slightly more strategic. Look at what's causing you the most background anxiety, what's humming in the back of your mind, even when you're trying to rest. That's probably a tab that needs to be open, at least partially. Maybe you can't solve the whole problem tomorrow, but can you move it forward one step?
Can you make one phone call about that insurance paperwork? Can you ask one person for help with that overwhelming task? Put that as one of your tabs. Then add your other two. Again, one practical, one survival. Write them down. Put them somewhere you'll see them. Some people use their phone wallpaper. Some people use a sticky note on the bathroom mirror. Some people set three alarms labeled tab 1, tab 2, tab 3. Find what works for you, but make it visible, because in grief, what isn't seen isn't remembered. Your brain isn't being lazy, it's genuinely impaired. You need external systems now. Tomorrow is also when you're going to practice something crucial, closing tabs on purpose. At the end of the day, you're going to do a simple review. Did I address my three tabs, even partially? Then everything else, all the tabs I didn't open, all the things I didn't do, I'm consciously closing them for today. You might even say it out loud. I'm closing the tab about organizing the photos. I'm closing the tab about returning those emails. I'm closing the tab about whether I'm grieving the right way. Just for tonight. They can reopen tomorrow if they need to, but right now, you're shutting them down so your brain can rest. Over the next week, days 2 through 7, you're going to practice this daily rhythm, and you're going to start noticing patterns. You'll see which tabs keep reopening. Those are the ones that genuinely need your attention, not just your worry. You'll see which tasks you keep avoiding. Those might need to be broken down smaller, or you might need help with them. You'll start to feel what three tabs actually feels like in your body. For most people, it's a small but noticeable decrease in that chest tightness, that mental static. You're still grieving, the pain isn't gone, but the chaos around the pain is slightly more manageable. During this week, you're also going to experiment. Maybe three tabs is actually too many some days. Maybe on your worst grief days, you need a two-tab or even one-tab day. That's not failure, that's calibration. You're learning your capacity, which changes day to day in grief. Some days, your single tab might be stay alive, get through the next hour. That's enough. You're also going to start noticing the people and situations that pressure you to open more tabs. The well-meaning friend who keeps sending you articles you should read. The family member who thinks you should be sorting through belongings by now. The internal voice that says you're not doing enough. You're going to practice a new response. I'm working with a simplified system right now. I can look at that later. You don't owe anyone an explanation. You're managing grief, and that's a full-time job your brain is already doing in the background. By day 30, something shifts. You're not healed. Grief doesn't work on a 30-day timeline, but you're different. You're someone who knows your capacity and works within it, instead of constantly exceeding it and crashing. You're someone who can look at a long list of tasks and calmly identify the three that matter today. You're someone who can say no without guilt because you understand your cognitive budget. You've become the intentional griever. You're still grieving, but you're not drowning in the chaos around the grief. You've cleared enough tabs to actually feel your feelings instead of just managing overwhelm. You might notice you're crying more, but panicking less. You're doing fewer things, but completing them. You're disappointing some people, but not abandoning yourself. This is what it looks like to honor your loss while reclaiming your agency. This is who you are now. You've got this. And on the days you forget, on the days 73 tabs open anyway and you feel like you're back at the beginning, come back to this. Listen again. Reset again. That's not failure. That's being human in grief.
Now, go open your three tabs.